Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are, and they've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code 3blokes, that's the number 3 followed by blokes, for 10% off all their natural products and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning and good evening from wherever you're watching or listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson and welcome to episode 114 of 3blokes and a Rugby League podcast. As always, I'm joined by my co-hosts Callum Wood and Jed Amos Goddard. Yet today we are joined by one of the most evasive individuals on the field of World of Rugby League and also one of the most evasive individuals off the field as well. I've been trying to get Kelsey Gentles on this podcast for months on end. And we've either not been able to get our schedules together, but finally we've been able to get you on. Kelsey Gentles, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing, mate?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, we're all spot on. We're excited to have you on. We were talking to you before. We've had your teammates on previously. We've had Amy, we've had Jodie, we've had Emily. Now it's time for the quartet. How's life been recently? Obviously, you mentioned last week that you couldn't come on because you had an England tour and an England chat as well. So how have things been going in that regard?
It's all good, you know. It's hectic as it would be, you know. It's at that point of the season where everything's just going at 100 miles an hour, and we're coming to the end of the Women's Super League season, but we're entering international weeks, and there's just so much going on that it's hard to keep up with. But you just got to keep going.
Definitely. So, talk about what you're kind of doing outside of the game at the minute. It's a big thing that I think a lot of people don't really realise, that the men's side of rugby league is they're purely focused on the game and they can kind of put 100% of the life into this. You've got your studies, you've got your stuff going on the outside. What are you kind of doing away from rugby league at the minute?
So away from rugby, I'm currently finishing, I'm in my third year of my degree, my undergraduate degree. I'm doing a degree in physical education. So I'm going into my last year now. So that's all a lot going on with there. Finished doing my dissertation and all that stuff. And then I'm working as well. So I'm doing a bit of coaching, amateur, the girls development side at my community club, and also working part-time as well to kind of pay the bills and stuff like that while I'm finishing the degree. So yeah, pretty busy.
Unbelievable effort. All me, Woody and Jed actually met at university though, so we know what you've been through. How are you finding kind of juggling dissertations and what took you down that route initially?
I think I'm kind of used to it now. Like, it's always been like quite a difficult struggle since I started university. When I started, I was already in the England development squad, and I've kind of got used to juggling it all and kind of having to make it work. But I'm anticipating it's going to be a lot harder this year, and I was kind of hoping the World Cup would go ahead so I would have a bit of leeway with the dissertation, but now I've got to wait another year, so I've kind of just got to get on with it. But I think I'm quite lucky because at Leeds Beckett, where I study, my tutors are all really supportive. I speak with them on a weekly basis to let them know like what's going on and things like that, and they are pretty understanding when I've got rugby commitments and other commitments where like I can't come into university or I need a different deadline for an assignment because I might be playing in certain games and things like that. Like, for example, when I went to Australia, I was away for the majority of semester one, and they were more than accommodating. They were great, to be honest.
Have you always been a woman who's enjoyed her studies? Have you always enjoyed that side of education?
Not really. Like, I've never been one for school. Like, I prefer sport. I prefer like playing sport. I prefer listening to music. Like, I prefer doing fun things. Never really thought school was fun. It was just something you had to do. And that's why I've always played sport from when I was a young kid, and I've kind of always had sport and school. So no, school's not for me. It's just something you just got to do, haven't you? Like, I wanted to get a degree because I thought, you know, I'm playing this sport, but your sporting career is only for a certain amount of time. You need to have a plan after you finish playing. And I wanted to make sure like I had a good plan and I had something to fall back on. And that's why I chose to go to university, really.
Superb stuff. Tell us about your upbringing. Obviously, you touched a little bit on it there. Were you born and raised in Leeds? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm a Leeds girl through and through. St. James Hospital, born there. Probably will stay here forever. I love it in Leeds. But yeah, so I was born in Leeds. Like, my dad's from Jamaica. My mum's English. Like, she's half English, half Irish. So I've got a bit of Irish descent as well. So yeah, I've got quite a few nationalities swirling inside. But yeah, my dad's from Jamaica. He came to England when he was really young, when he was a young child, and he's in London, then in Manchester, and then he settled in Leeds, met my mum, and they've just been here ever since. And then I've got 3 brothers and 3 sisters, so a big family. And yeah, we've always been here. I've just always lived in Leeds, went to school in Leeds, everything Leeds, Leeds, Leeds.
Do you find that competitiveness has come from you, from an upbringing of having 6 siblings?
I think, yeah, probably my competitive spirit is very much, you know, when you come from a big family, you've kind of got to fight for your place in the family a bit. And, you know, you have to have something. Like, we were all pretty good at sport, to be honest, me and my brothers. My sisters were more girly in that aspect. My sister, she liked to sing and dance and things like that. And I did a bit of that too when I was younger. But I was very much, I liked to do boyish things. I was very much a tomboy. I liked to play football. I liked to, like, wrestle with my brothers and things like that. I was more of the rough and ready kind of kid, whereas my sisters were more girly and things like that. And I think just because I've always been, because my brothers are the next closest sibling to me, I've got 2 brothers ahead of me. I'm the youngest and my sisters are a bit older, so I've always been a bit closer to my brothers than I would my sisters. And I think that's why I've ended up more giving them a clap round head than girly.
Did any of your brothers play rugby, or what other sports were it that were mainly involved in your household growing up?
My brothers played football. One of my brothers played football and rugby. So he played for a little while, and that's why I wanted to play rugby. But my mum and dad, they weren't going for it. They said it was too rough and, you know, you're definitely not doing that. So I waited till I was 16, and it was in, like, my last day of year 11. I was like, right, I'm going to go play rugby, mum. And she didn't believe me. So I was like, I'm getting on 2 buses. Like, I'm going to play rugby while you're at work. Like, I'm going. And she didn't believe me. And then she called me. And she was like, where are you on? I just finished rugby training. Like, I'll see you when I get home. And it was just, and that's how I started playing. And I did that for about a month. And then when she realised, like, I wasn't going to give it up, she was like, you can get the bus there, but I'll pick you up. Like, she started picking me up. And to be honest, ever since then, she's literally followed me everywhere, up and down the country, like, to play. Took me to all the training sessions, 5:30 wake up calls, take me to Yorkshire training, England training, stuff like that. So she's like, she's the best. But Tyrone, he played for a little while, but he weren't that great at rugby. He'll tell you that himself, but he likes to think of himself as my coach. Like, he'll tell me how to play all day, every day. And then Leon, he played football. He loves football. And so that's what I did. I played football for a long time. And it was only, like, we're towards 15, 16, I started playing rugby at all.
I'd definitely be like at family gatherings, if they're annoying, just saying, just run at me then and we'll see who's going to come off then.
That happens all the time.
I love that. I do that with my siblings. I mean, they're a lot younger than me. So it's probably bullying from my aspects, but I won't want to have to get tackled by you.
My brother's, like, he's 10 years older than me, Leon, and he rates himself massively when we're at a family party. He'll give it to me. I'm like, you don't even play rugby, you don't want it from me. I don't want to have to put you, like, sit you down in front of your girlfriend. Please just leave it alone.
Oh, you should definitely do it and record it and then just keep it in the bank for future reference.
That's a birthday video.
Yeah, definitely. What team was it that you first got into rugby league? Who did you go training for when you left school? Who were the first team?
It was East Leeds Rugby Club. So they were my local team. My brother played for them for a couple of years, and that's how I, like, knew who they were. And my high school was round the corner from there. So I knew a few of the boys, like, played for that team, but I didn't know whether they had a girls team and things like that. Girls rugby weren't as popular when I was in high school as it is now. Like, it's skyrocketed compared to when I was in school. So I was like, I don't really know if they have a team. So I waited. And then because I was 16, I was like, oh, I can play for the women now. Like, I'm just going to go jump it right in at the deep end and see how I do. And that's how I started playing. Like, I think I went to 1 training session for the under 16s. And then they were like, no, just, like, come to the women's game. Like, you come train with the women, and just play for them straight away.
How did you find getting into training at first? I know you said obviously you sort of loved it as soon as doing it, but what was it like actually going to train, especially being so young and playing for the women's team? How did you find that?
I think playing rugby is very different to watching it to start off with. Like, I've been a Rhinos fan for as long as I can remember, and I've been to quite a few games at Headingley and things like that. But when I went to go play it, I thought, this is hard. Like, this is so hard. And I was kind of trying to learn how to play it. And straight away, because I had quite a bit of pace about me, the coach was like, yeah, we're just going to play it fullback. Like, one of the hardest positions on the pitch. I was like, oh, great. Yeah. Okay then. And just learning, I was surrounded by all these older women. Like, I was 16 years old, and even now, like, when you turn 16, you go to open age, there's women that are like 30 years old, totally different ball game to be playing with a 30 year old woman that's knowledgeable and things like that, and you're essentially still a kid. So I think that's the hardest thing. But when I went to East Leeds, like, the women there were like, so they were so nice. Like, that's the memory that will always stay with me, you know, my first ever team. And like, they were great, to be honest. I loved playing for East Leeds.
Well, it's obviously must have instilled something, because here you are years later now and still obviously absolutely obsessed with rugby league and still obsessed with Leeds. So it was sort of like two things coming together there. How long were you at East Leeds until you signed for Castleford?
I 2 years. So
2 years.
I played my first season of rugby league, and then I went for trials for the England students, like a kind of one step down from playing actually for England. And I didn't know anything about it. Like I said, I barely knew how to play. I was literally just learning as I went along. And my coach was like, I really think you should go and see how you do, like, against all the best players in the country, players that have been playing since they were like 3 years old. So I was like, oh, all right then. I wasn't expecting anything to come from it. And Lindsay Anfield was the coach there. She just retired herself, and she was taking on this like young academy squad. So I went there, I trialed, and I made that squad, played under Lindsay Anfield, and I was 18 then. And as soon as like I started playing under Lindsay, straight after, she was like, I'm going to set up a Super League side, Castleford Tigers. I'd like you to come and trial just to see how you do. Like, there's no promise you're going to get in the squad, but just trial and see how it goes. And that's how I trialed for Cass. And then I was in the squad, and obviously was part of that squad for 5 years.
What did it feel? Because up until that point, obviously, Women's Super League, that was just sort of like being talked about. How did you find it personally, going from just playing East Leeds because you enjoyed it, and then going to England and getting into that, to then now being part of a Women's Super League? How did you find that, all trying to do this as well at such a young age? Yeah. It must be quite overwhelming at stages, but really exciting.
Yeah, it was. And when I went to trial for the English students, I was so scared. And I remember looking around thinking that, like, I am way out of my depth here. I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And when I went there, Sinead Peach was actually, she was at the trials as well. And she's a year older than me. And I knew who she was because I knew she played rugby, and I knew she'd played for Hunslet Warriors and was playing for Featherston Rovers. But we weren't really friends. We just had like a mutual connection because we were both from Leeds and played rugby in Leeds. And that was the first time we'd actually like properly met, and she was there, and she was like, I know you're scared, like, I know you're nervous, but like, you need to just like try your best, and you need to just forget everyone else here and just play like you'd play at East Leeds. The first time I've ever like met her, she was so nice to me, and like we just became friends straight away afterwards. And she could tell like I was so nervous. And then she carried on playing for Featherston. I was playing for Cass, but then the following year she came to play for Cass, and that's how it was. Like, playing in Super League, I was looking at all these players that I knew were really great players, players that played for England, and I was playing against them, and I was playing beside some of them, and I thought, what? I couldn't believe how fast I'd come from playing East Leeds, you know, in the Winter League. Just it's a nothing league, really. It's just for fun, and I'm going and playing these in the Super League, something under the professional league, against England players. It was so crazy. Sometimes you forget, like, now I'm thinking about it, like, it actually is pretty crazy. Like, you don't think about it, you just go with it at the time, and like, life just kind of passes you by. But it's like, to be 18 years old playing against like Andrea Dobson, Gemma Walsh, like big England players, it was really crazy, to be honest.
You must have had to do a lot of growing up in a short space of time, and I guess on and off the pitch, you know, from 16 up to 18, you're playing with people a lot older than you, you've just got into rugby, flying for it, you know, through the grades really quickly. So what was that like for you?
I think when you go into that kind of environment, you have to learn pretty fast. You have to learn lessons that you probably wouldn't, might not have to learn until you're 20 years old when you're 16. And, you know, you have to carry yourself a certain way, especially now because of all the like media scrutiny and things like that. You just, there's not really any room to make mistakes. Of course, you're going to make mistakes. I've made plenty of mistakes, you know, since I've been 16. And it's hard. I think it's hard to juggle, and you kind of have to remove yourself from being a 16-year-old doing what your friends are doing at 16, what your friends can do in college and things like that. And you're, and every time they ask you to do something, you're like, oh, I can't, I've got training. Like, oh, no, I can't go out. Like, I've got England training tomorrow at 6 a.m. Like, I really can't go, and things like that. And I think that's the hardest bit about it, being a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old, be saying no to your friends. Like, it's a lot easier maybe for the older players because, you know, they've lived that life, they've had their fun. But now, because everything's more professional, there's no room for that. You have to kind of make the choice really early. Like, I'm either going to be a 16-year-old or I'm going to be a professional athlete. And that's, I think that's the hardest lesson you have to learn. You know, you can't have the best of both worlds. You can try, and I think a lot of us did try, but it just did not work. You have to make a choice in the end.
Is that something that, you know, the clubs in England that you played for have kind of helped you with, that kind of work-life balance? And I guess, did you kind of feel like a teenager at the time? Like you said, you had to grow up very quickly and kind of skip that stage a little bit.
Yeah, I think in this environment now, like, they understand that, you know, we're only 16, 17, 18-year-old girls, and we're not going to be the finished article. We're not going to be as professional as, you know, the older players like the Emily Rudges, Jodie Cunninghams. It's just, you have to learn how to be those players. And when we're in club, you know, we have meetings all the time about, you know, social media and things like that. And they kind of try drip feed it so it's not too overwhelming. But that's why it's so important in the clubs that you have players that are like, we're really supportive of each other, that we need to support like the younger girls. Like when I was 17, it was more, we were all young, so we was kind of learning from each other. And now it's kind of going through a transition period where now there's players like me are now 20, 21, 22 years old. Now we can support those 16, 17-year-olds because we've been there, right? We were there right in the grey period where we didn't really know what we could and couldn't do. And now it's quite clear, so we can support them girls better.
You're a bit of a veteran already then at the age of 21.
I try to be, but, you know, I'm not that great a role model. I'm sure Lindsay Anfield will say.
Sure, you're selling yourself short there. But at those ages, then from 16 up to 18, then, what are you kind of seeing rugby league like at that point? And, like, do you have big ambitions at that point to achieve a lot in the game then? Or is it just something you're doing for the enjoyment and suddenly being fast-tracked as you go?
I think when I was 17 and I signed for Cass, I just thought, like, oh, I'm just, like, signed for Cass. Like, how cool is this? Like, I did not think I would ever going to be playing for England at 19 and things like that. So I was just like, oh, it's a bit of fun. I really did think, like, oh, you don't make your England. You don't play for England until you're, like, 25. Like, I've got a good few years, like, working towards this. And then when I was, like, 18 and I saw, like, and George Roach, 17, Caitlin Beaver, 17, all being brought into, like, the England squad for, like, a full revamp. And it was like, this is so crazy. Like, we are quite a young squad. We have a few, like, older players, like Amy, Jodie, Emily, Carrie. And then it's predominantly, like, as some people say, a bunch of kids running around. But we're young, definitely. But like you said, we've had to mature a lot faster than most 16, 17-year-olds because we are in this high-performance environment where things are expected of us. We're expected to go out and like, basically carry, you know, the weight of a country when we're playing an international fixture. Like, there's no room to be childish, no room to be a teenager, really, when you've got to be playing your best rugby in front of thousands of people on TV, on Sky Sports, on BBC. There's no room for that.
I think this kind of intricacies is something that's, you know, pretty much underappreciated. I think, especially with the women's game, it kind of, people don't realise the ins and outs of it and the sacrifices you make and kind of how difficult it all is.
Yeah, and there's a few girls that are 16 years old. They'll go to school all day and then they'll come and train for a Super League side at night time. And it's just, when you think about it, it's crazy. There's women that have got two kids, three kids, and they're playing in Super League. They've got a job, juggling a lot of plates. Most women start, their day will start at 5 o'clock in the morning because they need to go to the gym before they go to work and then go to training later that night and not getting home till 10 p.m. at night. I remember, like, most times when I'm training, I'm not getting home till 10:30 at night. If I've been out all day at uni and then going straight to training, like, that's quite a long day. And we'll never complain because we love to do it. That can take its toll sometimes. And that's why it can become quite draining when, you know, people say disrespectful things about women's rugby. And it's like, you don't really understand what we're sacrificing to do this. Not that we expect praise, but we choose to do it. But, you know, we don't get paid for this. Like, we're not professionals. This is our one and only job. Most of the girls have got three other things going on.
It is. They have some incredible efforts, and you mentioned that. I work from home. I can barely drag myself to park run once a week. So hats off to, you know, everyone involved in the game. dragging it back a little bit then to when you signed for Castleford in 2016. Your Leeds born and bred, big Leeds rider fan. What's it like signing for Castleford? You know, is it something that you don't really consider as much in the women's game? It's not such a big thing.
No, it's definitely a big thing. And, you know, I did want to play for Leeds, but Leeds didn't have a team at the time. They were like approached to make a Super League side. For whatever reason, they didn't want to do it in 2016. The following year, they decided to do it. And I'd already been signed for Cast for a year. And, you know, I liked the environment at Cast. The fans were real lovely. I liked the coaching setup. I wasn't going to just jump ship for the sake of that's my hometown club. At that time, you know, it was pretty easy to just leave a club, go join another club and things like that. So if I wanted to, I could have. But I loved Cass, I loved the club, I loved the girls I was playing with. And I think, you know, I was 18 at the time. I was thinking, oh, it's not really that important. Like, I'll just play for Cass, it's not a big deal. But it's a question I get asked over and over again. Like, because I'm a Leeds girl, everyone knows that I've supported Rhinos since I've been born. Like, why are you playing for Castleford Tigers? So I'm just then I have to explain it to them. But I think that was a bit of a, for me, I was like, oh God, I'm playing for Cast. Like, I'm wearing all this Cast stuff, walking through Leeds City Centre with like full Cast gear on. But being from Leeds, but I think that after a year or two, I got used to it. And I'm just like, yeah, like, coif, love Cast.
You had some success at Cast as well, didn't you, Kelsey?
Yeah, like, I had a pretty successful time at Cast. I loved it there. That was down 100% to the coaches. Like, Lindsay, she's moulded me into the player I was, because I probably wasn't very much of a player when I met her. I just was fast. I've always had quite a bit of pace, but skill-wise, she's built me up into a player that's of England quality, like, good enough to be in the EPU and things like that. So she came there, and when I came there, like, I knew she was a good coach. I knew she would make me a good player. And, you know, every year I was at Cass, I got better. And 2019 was my best season ever in rugby. Like, I've never played as well in my life, never scored as many tries. I had a really successful year.
You won the League Leaders' Shield, but unfortunately you just missed out on the Challenge Cup final and the Grand Final. How do you take that as an individual and as a team as well? We've just been talking about the Penrith Panthers over in the NRL. They won last year and won one now. Do you as an individual see that as... Obviously, it's devastating at the time, but do you take it on board and try and improve on that?
Yeah, I think that year was a year full of lessons for a lot of the girls that are in that squad. You know, we had a really great squad on paper. We had a squad that should have gone all the way on paper, but something just was going wrong at pivotal points in games, in the Challenge Cup final and in the Grand Final. Something wasn't quite clicking in our spine or whatever was going wrong. And that was kind of after the season ended, we were felt it was like a hangover that you couldn't get over, you know, thinking that how has things gone so wrong? Like, we went unbeaten all season until the last league game of the season. And then the following week got beat in a grand final. That's two defeats in a row right at the end when it mattered. And it was like, we didn't, at first was like, we just didn't understand. We didn't get it. We hadn't trained any different. We'd been training our socks off all year, like hadn't stopped, had a really great year. And then those two times when we needed to win, we just didn't. And it was, I think, a lot of the girls that went back and forth, like, what have we done different? Is it a psychological thing? Because if it's a psychological thing, we need to sort it out quick, because we need to be able to right these wrongs. And the CAS fans are great when you're winning, but when you're not winning and you're losing, you know, they can be quite intense, and they can really make you question why you're playing at all. And that was something we had to deal with after we lost. It wasn't just that we'd let each other down, we'd let down like the whole of CAS, and having to go back to CAS and deal with that. And I think that was the hardest thing of all. Like, we felt like we'd let everyone down when everyone had such high expectations of us, and when we felt like we'd let them down.
How do you personally deal with that when the crowd almost seems like they're turning on you a bit?
It's hard. I think you've kind of got to show it out to an extent. You've got to say, like, what they're saying is it comes from a good place, because they want us to win and they want us to be great, but they don't understand how they're portraying things, how it comes across to us, and how we're the ones on the pitch, where we actually lived it. Like, you're watching it, but we're living it. We're losing the game. And when you feel like a game's slipping away from you and you can't get it back, then it's a hard headspace to be in general. So I think those few CAS fans that, you know, really went in on us after the Challenge Cup final, after the grand final, you can tell that they've never played a game of rugby. They don't have a daughter, sister, auntie that plays rugby, that's been in those high pressure environments where, you know, we don't go out to lose, that, like, we were trying our best, and it was just a bit silly, really. And afterwards we was like, as a team, was like, let's just stay off social media. We saw a few comments and didn't want to see any more, especially the girls that we had to go to Australia the next day. It was like, we can't go to Australia in this kind of mindset. We need to just let it go. We need to just park it. We'll deal with it when we come back home, because otherwise it would have been so hard to go into another high performance environment, England playing in the nines, feeling like, you know, you're the worst rugby player on earth because you didn't win the grand final.
You feel like these type of, and I'll say it politely, but these type of morons online automatically go for the gender type thing.
Yeah. At the grand final, there were a few ridiculous tweets and stuff about how, you know, watching the women's grand finals, like, watching paint dry is better, and it's like under sevens quality and things like that. And I don't know if they genuinely think we're not going to see that, or they just don't care. They don't care about other people's feelings, and they think that, you know, we're less than because we're women and we're not professional and things like that. But we always see it. At least one women's player is going to see it. And I think it's not even about us. It's about other people see what you're tweeting. It says more about you than it does about us that you're tweeting those kind of things. Like, it's just disrespectful. And it just makes you think, like, why watch in the first place? If you don't like it, just don't watch. It's quite simple. Don't watch it. The men's rugby is probably going to be on the next day anyway. Just go do something else tonight. Watch rugby tomorrow. Like, it's quite simple. But it's like they write those tweets to try and diminish, like, all the hard work that we're doing all year to try and get people to get involved and engage in it.
I totally agree, Kelsey. You won't find three bigger advocates for the women's game than us three. But, like, I think it's just so confusing, because you wouldn't get anybody talking to or tweeting Simone Biles and comparing it to a male gymnast or, no. You know, I'm going back now, but Paula Radcliffe to, like, a men's marathon runner. Yeah. I just think it's peculiar. As soon as someone wants to be a bit negative, as soon as there's maybe a poor performance in a women's game, they will automatically go for the gender side of things. And I think it's pathetic. And trust me, I've seen you guys play on the field, and I do not want to ever be in that position of playing against you guys. So all the credit in the world to you. I love and respect and care for everything you do. And at the end of the day, you're playing rugby league.
Yeah.
I don't care what gender you are, you know, how tall you are, how, you know, anything like that. All the other variables can sit aside. You're playing rugby league to a top, top elite standard, so you should be proud of yourself regardless.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't, I think it's a baffling thing to try and compare us to the men. Like, we have never once said, like, we're as good as the men, we're as strong as the men, we're as fast as men. We've never done that. We play our own style of rugby, which is quite different to men's Super League. And you know, we both, we play different kind of styles and things like that. So it's just ridiculous to say, you know, as soon as one, like a winger does something, like I'll do something, like compare me to Ellery Henry, like it just be so, it's so silly because we're different people and we'll play a different way. And I kind of feel like the people that say stuff like that on social media, they're just so offended that a woman dare play rugby, which is a man's sport, that they just, they can't fathom it. Like, as soon as you do something, they just want to try and just drag us down, and it's just ridiculous, really.
I think you're definitely taking the best stance on it as well, and just, you know, almost blocking it out. But I think it's also a good case of that you're coming on stuff like this, you're being very open in interviews, and just being proud of who you are and where you come from, your roots, the sport that you play. And it's a beautiful sight to see. And trust me, the vast majority are proud of you and scared of you a bit as well, Kelsey. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Just to echo the sentiments there, it's just, I find it mind-boggling. Like you say, you don't get paid, you're not professionals. So would these guys go turn to an amateur game at the weekend and just say, why, and start? So I just don't get the mind process. You'll be more talented at rugby than they ever will be. So yeah, it completely blows my mind. And if they want to have their views, which are from like the 50s, then they can stay in the past and not go to the future where we're all going. So I think you have definitely the best right approach about it. Just touching back to the finals that you played in, although that there were losses, how did you feel personally to be playing in obviously the penultimate game, the epitome of what you want to play in? You were in the game to play in the finals. How did it feel for you on a personal level to reach that level?
It was, yeah, it was amazing to be in those finals, you know, to be on the first final of Sky Sports, you know, primetime TV on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, like that, it was amazing. And just to be part of that whole spectacle, it's a memory that, you know, none of us will ever forget, all the girls playing in that and stuff like that. It was amazing. You know, you never think. When I started playing rugby, I never thought I'd ever play on Sky Sports. I never thought I'd have all these amazing things, be on BBC, a red button, and be on BBC playing in a Challenge Cup final. You know, I've been to many Challenge Cup finals, and, you know, you never thought, oh, yeah, like I'm going to play in one of these one day. It's just not something that women thought would happen for us. So when it's this, all these amazing things have started to happen, you know, it's great to be a part of it now and being all the first and really laying a platform for all the young girls that are playing in the under 12s, under 14s, under 16s that are going to come after us. Like playing in that grand final, it was crazy. Like, you know, normally when the women play, you know, you've got a few people coming to watch you, a couple of your friends and family will know you're playing, but we was on Sky Sports and my phone was blowing up. Like everyone from Leeds knew, all the people I went to school with were messaging me like, I can't believe you're on Sky Sports. Like I just seen you like running the ball in, like this is so crazy. Like it was a crazy thing to get your mind around, to be honest.
I can imagine. Just off the back of that, how do you deal with personally being a role model for all these young girls coming now?
I think I feel quite passionate about it because the girls that was my age, we didn't really have that many role models. There wasn't a blueprint that you had to, that you could compare yourself with, because nothing had ever been done before. And a lot of the women that are playing now, we're doing all the first things and we're the people that people will compare to. So I always think it's really important, like, to be honest and to say, you know, it's not all amazing. Like there is things that are hard about playing this sport, and for example, social media is a minefield at the minute to try and work your way around that, what you can say, what you can't say, and how you're going to be portrayed and things like that. So I think the girls playing now, I always want them to play the sport because you love it. Don't worry about everything that comes with it. Don't worry about playing for England, playing for Yorkshire, having a social media following. All those things will come as soon as you set foot on the field. Like if you're a good person, it'll portray onto the field and people will be interested in you regardless of whether you push it or not. And I think it's about having passion. It's about loving the game, and that's what I've always loved, the game I play, because I love rugby, and you know, my family played, my cousins have played and things like that. And the girls that, when I speak to girls, I'm like, so do you, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to be? And they always say, I want to be a rugby player. I want to be a rugby player. Like, they've got aspirations for that to be their job. So me playing now, I'm going to do everything to make sure that in 5-10 years time, the RFL are pushing for them to be professional, like the women to be professional. I'll be retired by then, but the under 11s right now will be right in their prime, and they'll be they will be ready. They'll be well better players than we are. They'll be so much better. Like, they'll outplay us. So I definitely won't be playing until I'm 40. It's not for me. I'm going to retire gracefully.
I think you're again doing yourself a disservice for how good a player you are, Kelsey. one thing which would absolutely blow my mind if I was in your shoes is that when you think there were no women's rugby league sort of role models growing up, no one to sort of identify with. Like, when I were younger, like, pretending that I'm on a pitch and pretending I'm JT, or pretending that I'm just whoever my favourite Wakey player is at the time. Yeah. But there'll be girls playing rugby, trying to impersonate you and impersonate Jodie and Amy and all these. That must be so hard to get your head around.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I would never think, like, yeah, I'm a role model. You just think you're just playing. Like, there's people that come to games and they only want to take pictures of you. They only want to talk to you and you're their player, and you think, what? Like, this is a man's thing. Like, this is what the men get. Like, we would never get this. We're just a bunch of women playing rugby. Like, you just, and then when there's one, like, oh, and there's girls that are like waiting for you by the gate, like, oh, can I get a picture of Kelsey Gentles? Can I get Kelsey Gentles boots? Can I have your playing socks and things like that? And I'm like, oh, smelly playing socks, really? But like, it's just, and you look at them and they're just like, they don't want to take pictures and they're going to start giggling with their friends. And it's like, I can't believe that this is actually crazy. Like, that used to happen all the time at the Jungle in 2019, and none of the girls could get used to it. We like used to go in changing rooms. Like, can you believe that just happened? It was unbelievable, really.
Must have been amazing. And again, selling yourself short, you're not just women who play rugby, you're groundbreaking and trendsetters, and you should in relish every second of it, because you are the first of many to come in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, we're playing a standard right now, but the girls that'll come after us will blow us out the water. I've seen some of them play, and you know, by the time they're 16, they're going to be running rings around us. So I need to hurry up and get out of here.
Hopefully Wakey are getting some good players so we can get down and support Wakey and be challenging all the big teams in a few years' time.
Decent. It's all about like the community clubs, going into the community clubs. If the Wakey players were more, I don't know how to say it, like, proactive maybe, to bring the young talent through, because in Wakefield, the young talent is there. In every single club in the north, there's always good players, and it's just getting them to them clubs, because the top four clubs are always going to be more attractive, and it's what you need to get those girls to play in those local clubs, so that this Women's Super League becomes more expansive as a general thing, to become more competitive. Otherwise, it's going to be the same top four clubs fighting for the silverware every year.
Hopefully, there is more clubs than I'm from Eastmoor, and they've got a women's, like, and they've got like women's juniors and everything else. So they are starting to grow the game a lot more, which is obviously positive to see. Just back to talking to about yourself and your career. Obviously, you're flying high. Sort of obviously had the defeats in the finals, but you're on top of the world, and then COVID hits in terms of the club, and everything's put on halt. How was that to be? Everything's going boom. Everything, women's rugby's exploding, and then just nothing. That must have been so hard to sort of fathom it and sort of understand what's going to happen with rugby league, women's rugby league going forward.
Yeah, 2020 was the worst year ever. You know, we'd come back from Australia, like us girls, and we're geared up for pre-season, had a really great pre-season at Cass, signed a really great team. We had such strength in numbers in our squad. We had such a bouncing squad. We'd kind of recruited where we needed to recruit, where we had a few weaknesses and things like that. And like, I think we had 28 players, 1 to 28, were all strong players that, you know, you knew that they would go out on the field and they would do a great job for Cass. And we couldn't wait to start. And when COVID first hit, we weren't really told much. We were just like, yeah, the season's just like delayed for a few weeks. Just kept going. A few more weeks. The men's Super League started, so then we started applying more pressure, like what, like the men started, like we need ours to start. And they just could, for whatever reason, they just couldn't make a decision. And in the end, like end of August, they were like, yeah, it's cancelled. But we were kind of kept on a string the whole year, had to keep trying to train, socially distanced training groups are free, no squad training at all, because they kept saying, no, it's going to start. So we had to stay fit. We had to stay on top of things because there's like, no, at any moment, the RFL could at the drop of the hat say like, no, you've got a game next week. Like we just did not know what was going on. And then obviously we didn't play all year. And then that kind of took its toll because certain women, they stopped playing altogether. They, you know, they were at the end of the career. They decided to have a baby. They got a job, a different job, and they just, things just weren't connecting with rugby that well. So I think the game did lose quite a few good players and things like that. And that's something that, you know, you have to accept when there's no contracts to keep us there. You know, that we're amateur, you can come, you can go. And if the game's not serving you well, you have to kind of accept that part of it. But it was so hard. But to be honest, 2020 was a bit of a blessing in disguise for me, because I actually dislocated my shoulder in Australia and didn't really know what was wrong with it. It kept dislocating during training, during pre-season and stuff. I was getting it strapped really heavily. And I was like, there's something not right with it. I had a scan in February, and then my operation date was the day before the lockdown. So I didn't know I was going to go into a lockdown. So I was gearing up, waiting for my operation. And then my doctor called me and said, yeah, your operation's cancelled. And I needed a reconstruction. And so I had to wait 6 months till August to get a reconstruction.
You know, I often hear blessing in disguise, and I dislocated my shoulder in the same sentence. But it's, that's kind of the times we were living in last year.
Yeah.
How difficult did you find the COVID break overall? And then how did you kind of cope with it personally? You know, keep yourself going. Well, obviously, we'll say stop-start. It was just stop, wasn't it? And did you feel you kind of fell behind in rugby a little bit, were, you know, trying to keep yourself match fit and keep up with it?
Yeah, and at the time, I worked in a supermarket. So, you know, it was manic. I was working like 40, 50-hour weeks, trying to keep going with training and stuff, trying to get my runs in and things like that. And there was nothing going on. All I was doing was working, going home, working, going home. There was no training, there was no rugby and things like that. And it was, I think a lot of the girls felt like we were quite hard done by, because, you know, the Aussies were running around playing all their matches, playing women's NRL, state of origin, all of it. And we were doing nothing. And we was like, oh, we've got a World Cup next year. Like we've lost too much time. We're not going to be able to compete. Like we've actually lost too much time. We had played one game all year. We didn't even get any pre-season games in because of the England schedule, because we had to play the girls that were in EPU had to play Yorkshire versus Lancashire. So, and there was a big chunk of players that would have took the Super League clubs. They wouldn't have been able to field teams for pre-season games, so that had already took precedent because of the World Cup next year, and then everything got cancelled, so no team played one fixture all year. So that was so hard. And working in the supermarket, like 12-hour days every single day, in the height of the pandemic when everything's shortage, you know, when everyone remembers what happened with the toilet rolls, like it was mad. Like it was just so crazy to be in that, like in the thick of that when it was all kicking off. But like I say, it's a memory. Like I'll never forget working in a pandemic. Even though at times it was awful, and after the pandemic was over, I was like, oh, I need to get out of here. I can't keep doing this, because it's hard to explain to employers, like, no, I can't work this day. I've got to go to rugby. And they was like, oh, well, you worked the whole of 2020. It's like, yeah, I had no rugby. Now I'm going back. And it was just, so then I was like, nah, just snake out of here, Steve. Leave it out.
I think I read earlier you worked in a co-op in Leeds, didn't you, and you used to get baskets chucked at you by customers.
Yeah, like, oh, in the thick of it, it was not a great place to work. Customers like threw baskets at me when there was a shortage of flour. There was one pack of flour, I got that pack of flour thrown at me. I had some really aggressive customers like racially abusing me. That used to happen all the time just because there were shortage of stuff. Like, so much stuff happened that year. And I just thought, at the end of it, you just felt kind of deflated. And it was like, yeah, like, this is my job, I understand it, but I don't come to work to get abused. Like, I don't come to work to be shouted at for 12 hours. And that was the thing that we were working. Everyone that worked, that was a key worker, was literally working the socks off. And you know, most people were appreciative, but there were some people that just did not care. They were only for themselves. And it was like, yeah, this is my job, but, you know, I'm in this pandemic too. Like, we're all in this. Like, none of us are allowed to go out. I know it's frustrating, but, you know, we're all in the same boat.
That's shocking to hear that. I'm absolutely astounded by, you know, some of the abuse you got. Now, listeners will find this hard to believe, but I've actually got a girlfriend, Fran, who started working the co-op in Leeds last year during lockdown as well. So she got absolutely peppered as well during that period. I don't envy you, it's fair play.
Yeah, it was not fun to be working in the supermarkets at that moment in time.
When did the turning point come? Then obviously, you know, three or four lockdowns, but when did it kind of get back to rugby and things started looking up again for you?
So I had my operation in end of August, and we were starting to go back to England training in October. So I was off for then, and then I came back in end of September, and I was like, right, Steve, like, I'm back now. I've got to go back to England training. And Cass training was starting once a week, and physio, so, and he was a bit more like standoffish, like, yeah, no, like, schedule me in when I'd already told him like all my training dates, and it was just kind of becoming a bit of a battle to try and like get the time off, because he got so used to me just being available all the time. So I said that after Christmas, like, I just need to go. And the actual turning point was a customer came in and like really racially abused me. Like, it was the worst that I'd ever had. And then after that, I was like, I'm done. Like, I actually can't do this. So I came home and I was like, explained to my mum, like, mum, I can't work there anymore. Like, I need to find a new job. And then she was like, right, you're just not going back. And so I just never went back. I just like, Steve, I just can't do this anymore.
Leeds co-op customers need to have a word with themselves. Honestly. Kind of looking at a bit more positive things, and back to the rugby a bit more, and skipping forward to 2021 a little bit, and you leave Castleford and join York City Knights, a big move as part of the Super Seven. But kind of firstly, how do you look back at your stint with Castleford? They had a fair bit of success there, a few finals, League Leaders' Shield. So how do you kind of remember that?
I've got nothing but positive memories of Cass for like the most part. You know, it was a really great 5 years, and what we built, the culture we built, and, you know, how we played together. I think it will stay with me forever, because like I'll probably always compare to what it was like at Cass. You know, it's my first club, my first professional club. I was there since I was 17. So I'll never forget it. I'll never forget, you know, my first teammates. And I think out of like the Super Seven, I was at Cass for the longest. So I knew all the players that had been and gone, all the coaches that had been and gone. So I think, you know, leaving was really hard for me. And I think people at the time were forgetting, you know, it wasn't an easy decision to make. It was tossing and turning for weeks, like leading up to it, thinking like, I don't know what I can do. But I kind of, at the top and bottom of it was, we'd probably done everything we could have done at Cass, and without the right, we needed better support. We needed support in certain areas that, you know, the club for whatever reason just couldn't give us. And, you know, thinking it's a World Cup year, Lindsay had left the club by that point, and nobody knew she'd signed for York City Knights. Like, none of us knew the Super Seven. We, as they call us, we didn't know that, you know, she'd signed for York City Knights, and she was going to be their head of rugby there. As far as we were concerned, she had left, and she just needed to get away with it because of all the toxic things that had happened in the weeks leading up to the Super League starting. So that was that, and we was kind of there thinking that, you know, like, crap, we've lost our head coach. We have assistant coaches like Maz and Kirsty, great coaches, but they were very much used to the assistant coach role. So to throw them into the head coach role was probably hard for them as well. And it was that transition period where it was like, you know, Super League starting a few weeks. How, if we don't start getting some really good training, getting the combination started, like, we're going to struggle to compete with Saints, Wigan, Leeds, all these top four teams, and there's pressure on us that, because we did so well in 2019, like, we didn't want to let people down again, and we wanted to live up to the expectation that, you know, Cass have still got a good squad, and there were quite a lot of girls there that were in EPU and things like that. That's pressure in itself, you know, you're an EPU player. You need to show why you're in EPU. And you know, when it came to having to leave, like, it was so hard, and it was hard to leave the girls personally. And for weeks after, I was questioning, like, did I make the right decision? Like, have I messed up here? Like, maybe I should have stayed and things like that. But now I look back, like, I am glad things happened the way they did. And, you know, some things weren't great, and it hasn't been a great 6 months, you know, personally, with some of the things that happen, you know, the repercussions of doing that, you know, you lose certain things when you make a decision like that. And I've had to kind of accept that and move forward with that. But at York, it's so amazing. The girls are great, and they welcomed me with open arms. And, you know, we got to a semi-final. That's not just a fluke. We've had to work really hard for the past 6 months, and we've had to do a lot of things in a short period of time that most teams get over a year to learn how to do, and that's something that, you know, we are really proud of as a squad.
What's it like when you play against Cass and go back and play Cass? I know you've had quite a few times now since you've moved to York.
It's emotional. I would say that it's not just any ordinary game all week. You know, Lindsay always says to me, like, you need to get your head straight, because she also knows, like, me and her were there from the beginning. There's a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings that go into that, playing against your former teammates and your former coaches, your former club. So you need to, like she always says, like, you need to have your mind straight and settled and just focus on the task at hand. Don't worry about, you know, the first time I played Cass, social media were just awful. I needed to stay off it because, you know, the Cass fans, they felt betrayed, like they felt like I'd betrayed them and this, that and the other. So the first time I played him, I made that mistake. Like, I didn't think it was going to be that big a deal, and I couldn't handle, like, the pressure and all the emotions that went into it. So I probably didn't play that great that game. And after that, I was like, that could never happen again. I'm going to have to play Cass at least twice again. Like, I need to make sure that I'm playing my best rugby for this squad. I've come to this team, and they expect me to play how I play. They don't expect me to play like a second-hand version of myself. I need to be playing well. So after that, it was a bit of a wake-up call that, you know, I didn't expect it to be as emotional as it was, but it was, and all the stuff that happened after that was just a lot.
There's so much to deal with already in such, you know, short career and time in rugby league. They've mentioned Lindsay Anfield a few times in there, so you've signed your cast, you've worked under her for, you know, 5-6 years now. So that's a bit of what your relationship's like with her, and kind of how key a figure she's been in your career up to now.
She's so instrumental in everything. You know, she's known me since I was 16. So she always says, like, you know, I've known you since she was a baby, and now you're like this grown up that's like driving a car and just got a job and things like that. She's just like, I just can't believe how old I am. Like, how old I was when I met you, and now you're 22 years old. And she supported me with a lot of things off the field as well. There's more to just being a rugby coach than just going and teaching someone how to play on the field. There's a lot of things that go with it. You know, you've got to be like a mentor, friend. Lindsay's been kind of like a family member at times. You know, the things when I've been going through things, like, she's always been really supportive and kind of listened to me all the time when, because sometimes you can't help it, your off-field stuff does affect you on the field. And I think it were really important that she's always known everything going on, because when I've maybe had a quiet game or I'm just not firing like I normally do, she understands why, and she can help me kind of park all that stuff so that I am performing on the field, and we'll pick that stuff up when it's over. But she is, I in my opinion, she's one of the best coaches, and there's a reason why she has all the achievements she has, and she's held in such high regard because she knows her stuff. She's played at the top level. She's beat the Aussies and the Kiwis. You know, she's done it all, and now she's coaching, and she's putting her knowledge into the younger generation.
The 2021 Challenge Cup final, Kelsey, talk to us about that. The loss to St. Helens.
I think, you know, Saints, come on, this year, Saints.
Yeah.
Look how good they are, you know. You cannot say a bad word. You can't say the wrong team won and everything because the right team won. Like, we obviously, we'd only been together a few weeks. We weren't really expecting to go out and cause a massive upset because we'd only been together. We were just focused on, you know, getting our combinations right, seeing how we play together, see what was going on. You know, we was very much in the early stages at York, where everyone was getting to know each other, getting to know how they play and things like that, and kind of just getting like a team ethos, like these are our standards, let's hold each other by these standards and we will go far. So that was kind of the stage we was at when we got to a Challenge Cup final, and it was just crazy how we got there, to be honest. Nobody expected us to get there. And playing Saints, I think in the first 20 minutes, I could spot some of the Saints girls, like, they were shocked. They were shocked at, like, how tough we were making it for them. And I think people did probably expect the scoreline to be a lot higher than it was. You know, they probably expected the Saints girls to probably put 50 points past us. And that's something we're happy about, that we went there, we stood up for ourselves, we did give it our best shot, you know, we scored a try, we didn't even get nilled. Like, to be honest, all things considered, it was a good day.
Like you say, you're pretty much a new squad. And to say in your first full season, you've reached the Challenge Cup final and were, you know, you were a try away from reaching the grand final as well. It's an incredible first season as a collective. You can't even imagine what you're going to do in the future.
Yeah, I think that just says that how good coaches like Adam Cuthbertson and Lindsay Anfield are. They came into the York side that was struggling. They added a few of us, you know, experienced players that we've got experience playing in these high pressure games. And we've just come in, you know, and saying like, we know what it takes to play in these big games, and we just want you guys to come with us on the ride. And, you know, the York girls, they were so excited. There was no animosity. Like, they were all welcomed us with open arms, and they want to be in the semifinals. They want to be in the grand finals too. You're not playing in Super League to be getting beat every week. Like, they were ambitious, and they have, it's a running joke that we have that, you know, the players that have played in the big games, we're probably not as like enthusiastic about things as the York girls. Like, they're so enthusiastic. They just want to run as hard as possible, tackle as hard as possible, where, you know, when you've played for a few years and you're used to playing in like high pressure environments, the hard games, you're thinking more, it's more like tactical, like, you know, we're doing this to get to like a certain point, whereas they're just like, give me the ball, let me run, that kind of thing. And that's the kind of balance we're trying to strike, so we have an equal balance of both. And like I say, we've achieved so much already going into pre-season next year, having a great pre-season behind us. I think that we actually really will be contenders in 2021, and what we will get a good season underneath us by the end of 2021, like, I think we will be in the same position again. We will be in a playoff semi-final, and hopefully we will get to a grand final and win it.
I love that type of confidence. I think in general, just the club of York in the men's game as well as the women's game is such an exciting brand, and you've obviously got brilliant players on each side of the, you know, the women's and the men's team as well. So apart from Wakefield, obviously, which is my number one club, I do like looking out for York, and, you know, I think you've got a very exciting future ahead of you.
Yeah, the club is incredible, to be honest. And when I went to go visit the club before I signed, that was one of the big things I was interested in. You know, I've been at CAS for quite a few years. I know the CAS setup and things like that, and I wanted something a bit different. And, you know, going into World Cup year, I wanted to be training in probably the best facilities I could do, you know, making sure I'm in the best shape and I'm playing the best rugby and things like that. And went there, and the chairman, John Flatman, just sold the club to me, showed me everything, answered any question I had. And he's so passionate about women's rugby. It was just a breath of fresh air that someone in such a high position held the women in such high regard as the men do. And, you know, when we're at York, we're very much equal. The men are getting taken care of, and so are the women. And we train at the same facilities, in the same gym. The men train on a Tuesday and Thursday, we train on a Wednesday and a Friday, and everything is just the same. And, you know, we've played a lot of double headers already, because it's important for us to play at the stadium, like that's our home too. So we're going to play there too. We're not going to play on a separate pitch or on the training pitch. We're going to play on the pitch in the home ground in front of our home fans. And that's one thing at York, like, it is really great. You know, John Flatman does take care of us really well.
As it should be. And I think it's a case to argue that probably out of all the teams at the minute in the women's game, York have had a better season than the men's team as well.
Yeah.
So it's up there in terms of, you should be talking about contention. Kelsey, I just want to touch on a subject that we haven't really ever spoken about on this podcast, just because we haven't had the opportunity or the guest to speak. So you spoke about earlier on in the podcast in terms of when you're working in the co-op during the COVID lockdowns and so on and so forth, but the racist abuse, and not only the fact that you're a person of colour, but you're a woman of colour as well. And I mean, for a moron, there's a lot of target there for them. Yeah. How do you deal with that? How do you adapt to that? Because I know personally, I've got that privilege. I'm a white Caucasian male who was born and bred in Yorkshire. I've never experienced anything like this. So just some insight on your life and how you managed to deal with it.
It's an emotionally charged subject, especially with everything that happened in 2020 with, you know, the Black Lives Matter and all the protests and George Floyd. And, you know, George Floyd was a catalyst, but it's not the first thing. And, you know, ask any person of colour, any black person, you know, this happens all the time. You know, this isn't just one thing that's happened. This is a constant thing that's happening all the time to black people, because for whatever reason, people see us as less than. And it's ridiculous, really. And in rugby league, you know, it's a predominantly white sport. And the girls that there's only a handful of girls that, you know, are women of colour. You know, it's getting, every year there's a few more, but there's still not many of us at all. There's only like me, Shani from Saints, Sophie Robinson from Leeds, things like that. So we feel like it's very much our responsibility to send these messages, to talk about like uncomfortable subjects that you know, white the white girls, they don't want to talk about it. And you know, I understand why, because it's not their fight. They're there to support, but they would never truly understand it, because they aren't living it. They can only understand it to a certain extent, which is fair enough. And now with we kneel for Black Lives Matter and stand for discrimination and all that kind of stuff. But that's only one thing. That's only a symbol. We need to talk about the subject, because in rugby league, there's very much still racism going on. You know, when I left Cass, I was subject to racist abuse for weeks. And it's just the easiest thing to say. You know, they won't talk about how bad a player you are. The first thing they want to talk about is that you're black, and you're a black this and you're a black that, the colour of your skin. It's the easiest thing to pick on. And I think as a black woman, you've had to have a thick skin. You know, my dad's always told me from when I was a little girl, like, I'm going to have to work twice as hard to get half the chances. And that's something that I think all black people are used to, but black women, like, especially, things are just harder for us because we're black and a woman. And, you know, the odds are stacked against us in a lot of things. So you have to really work hard to try and get noticed and try to get things that, you know, if you were white and you were a male, think would come to you a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting from that standpoint. What can people like me, Woody and Jed, or any listeners out there that aren't fully equipped with the knowledge of it, what can we do to kind of not help the situation, but just kind of aid it in that sense? What can we do?
I think just calling it out as soon as you see it. That a lot that is that it makes such a big difference. You know, you, how many times do you hear something like something disrespectful, but you start saying it all like, oh, it's not my battle. They weren't saying it to me. But if, when someone says something that's, you know, derogatory or derogatory to women or racist and things like that, if they get called out by a white counterpart, they're much less likely to say it again because they know people are listening and they don't know if, you know, the white person that stood next to him is, you know, has the same views of them or actually has a view that, you know, don't say that about me. Do not be, don't be a racist, don't be sexist. Like, it's such a small thing, but it makes such a big difference because, you know, if someone says something and they're like, wait, don't say that, that's disrespectful. Like, how dare you say that? They're lost for words. They're always like, they don't know what to say because they're not used to being called out. They expect to be called out by me, but they would never expect to be called out by their white counterpart.
Definitely. It's very, very interesting. Once again, I think I'll say it again, the morons that do it, I think it's just a very easy thing for them to say. If they're uneducated or don't have any intelligence, it's very easy for them to go straight to colour, to go straight to femininity.
Yeah.
As opposed to a poor performance or an attitude or so thank you for that, and thank you for opening up, because it's interesting. Once again, I know that we're three blokes, but we're not going to call ourselves three white blokes, but we have got privilege and we know that, but we want to do everything we can to promote the game, to promote equality and everything about that. So thanks for opening up about that, Kelsey.
It's okay.
Brilliant.
I think it's really important to have these conversations. It's such a uncomfortable subject to talk about, but if it doesn't get talked about, nothing is actually going to change. And, you know, the change is slow as it is. But if you don't talk about it at all, it's just going to stop. And, you know, these things are going to keep happening to Black people. And it's just, in the UK, I guess we're lucky per se, because we're not subject to such brutal attacks. But we're more, I think in the UK, it's more subtle. We're more subject to the microaggressions, and especially Black women, like the microaggressions are ridiculous in this country. But you know, whether it's being beat up on the street or being, you know, not being given your opportunities because of the color of your skin, it still hurts just as much.
Very, very interesting. Let's talk about England very briefly. Last but not least, we'll talk about your England career.
Yeah.
The tackle seen around the world. We've read about it. We've seen it. Everybody's seen it. In fact, actually, you know, York published it when you signed for them. It was the most viewed video clip online of a female athlete, apart from the WWE, the wrestling side of things. Talk to us about that tackle. Talk to us about the occasion and what you remember about it.
I remember not thinking it was anything substantial. It's just like, I just thought, oh, whatever. It's made a tackle. It's just a cover tackle. Did not anticipate any of the crazy stuff that would come after it. Obviously, we went to the nines, and that was just a totally different ball game, totally different rugby league. Like, it was hard. It was a great experience, but we didn't do as well as we wanted to do. And I think that's one of the big like learning points that came back. It was like, we were out of our depth. We needed to do something different. Next time we go, we'll be different. But obviously playing, it was my first time playing against the Australians, the Kiwis, me, Roachy, you know, the younger players. It was our first kind of taste of it. Whereas like Jodie, Emily, Shani, Amy, some of the older ones, they played in the last World Cup. They knew the players that were coming to play. We'd only seen them on NRL. So we were like, yeah, I'll play against like Ali Brigginshaw, Jess Surges, that'll give them a good go. It was crazy, but it was a good experience. And you know, first time playing in an England shirt, it was amazing. Broken shoulder, you know, dislocated shoulder, came back with that, but that, and then going to PNG 10 days later, it was, you know, highlight of my year 2019, definitely to go and experience the things that we experienced. My first time in Australia, seeing Sydney and Brisbane and all of that. It were great. And that tackle, when I came home and I was thinking, why is everyone watching it so much? Like, it's not even that great. And then 45 million views, it was just mad.
It is that great. And again, stop selling yourself short, Kelsey. You've done it all podcast. Sing your praises. We can only sing your praises so much. You need to sing your own praises.
I'd only been in my uni degree a week, and then I went to Australia, so I hadn't really met anyone on the course. And I came home, and obviously went to uni and stuff, had a practical, and there was a boy that came up to me, and he was like, "You're that girl on that video, like you're that girl who made that tackle." And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You know Kelsey?" And I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "Oh my god, you're a legend." And I was like, "Who are you?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm Billy." And I was like, "Oh, okay, nice to meet you."
Must have been a celebrity at university before you'd even properly started. It's not a bad way to start university life, to be fair.
It was, I think, after that, my lecturers actually like believed me, because I've probably leading up, they probably didn't believe that that was an athlete, and I was going away for 6 weeks to play in Australia, and I came, and then they saw the video and they were like, "Oh, all right, fair enough."
Fair play. Can't really argue against that.
Yeah, exactly.
Just two last questions from me, Kelsey, but I just want to say it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. You are a role model, and I wish you in England and York nothing but success for the future. Two quick questions from me. I'm going to say you can't pick anyone from York at the moment, so you can avoid some bias, but who is the best player you've ever played with, and who is the best player you've ever played against?
Oh, that is hard. That's actually so hard, because there's a lot of so good players. I think the best player I've ever played with is Georgia Roach. You know, she's the best halfback. She's just so good at what she does. It comes naturally to her. She could play halfback blindfolded. Like, she just knows her stuff so well. Her and Tara Stanley, like, it would be hard to pick between them two, because when me playing with Tara Stanley, we have more of a partnership, you know, in the back three, her at full back, me on the wing, so we play really well off each other, so that's why I like playing with her. But Roachie has always been, when she's been my halfback, I've scored a lot of tries, because she's so good at what she does. I think best player I've ever played against, that is so hard. I think it is Jodie Cunningham, though, because she was a great fullback and now she's a great 13.
Yeah.
She's just like, when she went to 13, I imagine a lot of people were like, "No, not going to work." But no, look at her. She made that 13 shirt her own. She's playing phenomenally. She's so good. So, yeah, I think them two. Yeah. Yeah, I stand by my decisions.
Kelsey, last but not least, outside of rugby league, ignoring the entire sport, but what makes Kelsey Gentle smile?
What makes me smile? Like, I just think, I don't know. What makes me smile? I like to laugh. Like, I'm probably like one of probably the most giggliest people ever. Like, I am always cracking up, cracking jokes. Like, everyone that knows me is just like, "Oh, she's just like, she's dumped it." Lindsay's always shouting at me, like, "Well, you can never be serious." Like, so I think, I don't know, life makes me happy. I think that's one of the big things I always stand by, you know, just enjoy your life, because before you know it, it's gone. Like, you're going to look back, and if you don't appreciate what you have when you have it, you'll look back and you'll be like, "I wish I enjoyed it more. I wish I took more photos. I wish I had like happy memories and I wasn't stressed the whole time," because you look back and you think, that was actually a really great time in my life. I always think that sometimes, like in 2019 playing for Cass, there were some really stressful times playing in that team, and you know, the pressure that was on us. But now I look back and I think they were like the best memories, being in that team and getting to play with those girls every single Sunday they're probably the best memories I've had so far. And I think that's one of the big things.
Excellent. I said at the start of the podcast, this is episode 114, and I think I've done 112 of the 114 episodes, and this is hands down the most interesting, intriguing, beautiful conversation that I've had with anybody, even as a podcast in general. Kelsey, you're a role model, you're intelligent, you're 22, which makes me sick, because I won't even tell you what I were doing at 22, never mind. Like you say, you're a woman of colour, you're an elite athlete in rugby league, you should be, you're a future teacher, you're a student, you're everything that everyone should dream to be. And I'm so proud of you, and it's the first time I've spoken to you, and I'm sure the public is as well. And you should be really proud of yourself. You're a model young woman, and thank you so much for coming on our podcast and talking about it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Excellent stuff. Thank you, Woody. Thank you, Jed, for coming on once again. And thank you, Kelsey Gentles, once again. And this has been episode 114 of Three Blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Head on over to all our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, please give us a rating on all our podcasting platforms, if possible, please. We are available on all podcasting platforms. Keep an eye out for our future podcasts and interviews. And have a listen to our archive with the likes of Jodie Cunningham, Emily Rudge, Amy Hardcastle, Tom Johnston, Barry McDermott, and everyone else. Kelsey Gentles is down there as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you all down the road.